Are you someone who tries to drive while distracted by your phone? Someone who props it on the steering wheel or peeks down at it for a glance? Or just scrolls and scrolls? If so, you could be the next person to get into a fender bender, get a ticket, veer off the road, or even cause a crash that kills you or someone else. Enough already. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the best is yet to come.
Aha! Hit the drop.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Mike, do your job.
I don't have everything ready.
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host David Sampson. Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles. Today's guests, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero, 11-year NBA veteran Jamal Mashburn, former MLB manager and World Series champion Terry Francona, and now, sitting in for Rich, it's David Sampson.
Yes.
Woo!
Back for day two. I happened to bring a second blazer just in case you invited me back for day two.
Well done.
Because you never know after day one.
Planning ahead.
Could have gotten the call from Rich saying, no, thank you so much. No, don't need you back in that seat.
It wasn't a given, you know.
Very happy. Great day yesterday. We have a great show. So much going on that we had a debate, and we did it with Jason, who's here today, trying to figure out where we were going to start. So we decided.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
In the house.
You have a lot to cover here because Mike was great yesterday. He made me feel at home. And I don't know how you're going to possibly be better than he, but you got 3 hours.
I mean, I got to start by paying attention, I guess.
Now I know that you were a lying executive by saying Mike was great.
Let me tell you, but he had a clean slate with me.
That's true.
And so true. Everybody comes in here.
Jay, at one point we're trying to go to break, and then Mike just jumps into a story, and David just sitting there goes, we'll wait.
Whenever you're ready to stop talking.
I just look at Mike, I'm like, yo, we said break like 2 minutes ago.
Thought there's a big clock in front of us or anything.
Yeah, right?
We're ruled by the clock. Father Time, that's what I've been thinking about, and I was wondering, as I started this morning doing nothing personal at 5 in the morning, I was thinking about Father Time. Am I too old to be doing shows with people next to me knocking on the wall in the hotel telling me
did you piss off your neighbor again this morning?
And I don't know whether it was the same person in the room next door because the knock on the wall was different. So were they attempting a different way to get me to stop talking loudly at 5 a.m.? Because it was more of an open fist the way you got slapped at Brooks and Dunn. Versus the slap with the hand. And Father Time wins. And one of the hardest things when you're with athletes is trying to figure out how to tell them that they're not good anymore. Mm. And it's very, very hard when they've been the best at what they do for a number of years because Father Time is going to be undefeated. And there's a player in the NBA where Father Time has not yet won, but he's coming for LeBron. But not today. Not today. And LeBron is trying to hang on for his son, Bronny. And it got off to a rather less than smooth start when Bronny had that health scare to start. And then he came back. He's had, by all intents and purposes, a mediocre season. Can we call it mediocre? Is it even good enough to be mediocre?
Average season.
Average. That's mediocre.
Bronny.
Bronny.
Yeah, he's had an average season, you know.
Yeah, I think average. I mean, he's out there. He's playing. I think considering what he had to go through medically and coming back.
Well, it's
from
a miracle.
That,
I don't want to say it wasn't. But
it's remarkable that he's even playing this year. So let's just say that.
Let's give him props for playing.
Absolutely.
But had he not had the issue and his last name were not James, are we, first of all, we're not leading the show with him, even though we can do anything we want when Rich isn't here. But he's not declaring for the draft. I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind.
No, if you're just looking at the black and white on the stat sheet, you know, someone averaging 5 points and whatever the rest of the stats are, does not declare for the NBA draft. We're not talking about them as a first round pick, and we're not talking about them in the A block. It's just plain and simple.
So nepotism's a thing. I'm the beneficiary of nepotism. I love nepotism. It's one of my favorite things in the world, to be born on third and just spend your whole life stealing home, which has been sort of my raison d'etre.
I love the fact that you just own up to that. That's amazing.
That was a huge word alert. Can you explain what that means?
Raison d'etre?
It means reason to be. It's sort of being what I do. Alert.
Thank you.
I love stealing home all the time because I wasn't satisfied with my start and how lucky I was. I wanted to always do more. I wanted to get into Rich's chair. So now what? I got to find the next thing because I'm not satisfied. But Bronny, can you imagine being LeBron James's son and playing basketball? Let's just start with how that would be.
I don't think I could.
You wonder why Picasso's kids aren't artists? How does that work? You know, Jordan's kids tried to play, maybe, not good. Bronny, the goal was that LeBron wanted to play with Bronny. And Father Time said, Bronny, better hurry up. And so we always looked forward to 2025. That was the year many, many years ago, and now we're here. So Bronny has now declared for the draft, and the only question is, will any owner draft him because they think they can then get LeBron James?
Is that the question?
That to me is the only thing in my head, is there someone who's going to waste a draft pick on the thought that the Lakers will trade LeBron James to them because LeBron is only interested in playing with Bronny?
I would say without certain.
Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah, I don't think you're off on that.
I mean, look at all the dumb NBA draft picks over the years, TJ. It happens every single year. Someone will most certainly do this.
I don't think they will. I think the NBA likely is telling teams, lay off. Make him an undrafted free agent.
Let him sign
with the Lakers. Let him play with LeBron. It makes LeBron come back next year.
So you think So now you're saying that the league will step in and do things like this?
Very quietly.
Really?
They don't take out ads like in the LA Times. They don't send out memos. No one is that stupid to have any sort of way to trace this, but leagues get involved in things all the time.
Interesting.
And they have to. It's their business. They're in the business of doing what is best for the entire league to build the revenue. Having Bronny and LeBron play together, that's TV gold.
Yeah, that's best for business.
And Adam Silver, as you know, is going out for new TV deals. Mm. So this is the moment where they're looking for as much fanfare as possible. And what better fanfare is LeBron James, the second greatest player of all time? Like how I don't even want to start the debate on that because I don't know where your head is.
We're a Team MJ show, so.
So it's clear that Michael Jordan is the GOAT, and it's not a demographic, it's not an age thing. But LeBron James being with Bronny.
LeBron James.
That's a big thing. It's going to be huge. I'll watch. Everybody will watch.
Everyone will watch. Absolutely.
It's a father-son, and what a credit to LeBron that he's still playing.
It's incredible.
And I don't want to make it out to be that LeBron is hanging on by a thread. Because that's not the case. Because of the season, the last two seasons he's had, it's just amazing at his age what he's doing. But I think it's important to note that it can end at any moment. There could be an Achilles tear. I mean, he's not a young guy anymore.
Nope.
And you know, from people our age, we go out and try to play basketball. The odds are we're in the hospital.
That's why Brotman will never play pickleball.
Right. Basketball, pickleball, over.
He's afraid of tearing his Achilles.
I don't want a year rehab at 43 years old of an Achilles tear. What are you, nuts?
So I'm the opposite. I will play tennis, pickleball, basketball. I'll do little sprints here just to test the fact that I'm not too old to do it. And then my back will hurt, my quads will hurt, and I'll be a little despondent. But I'm not willing to give in the way you are.
I'm a realist.
I'm pretty pragmatic, too, but I don't want to lose the fight to Father Time.
I mean, I've also never run a marathon. You haven't run one this week.
I'm leaving here to head to go do a marathon.
That's what I mean. That's, yeah, that's psychotic. So, but I'm happy for you.
No, you're not.
It brings you peace. It brings you joy. And that's all that matters.
It brings me pain and then pleasure. I have a weird thing about that. And I think maybe some of you share this. The more pain you have, the better chance of the greater pleasure.
Do you have any tattoos?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I do.
Okay, I was going to say.
About 12.
Wow.
You do not.
I do.
Really?
Yeah, I have a lot of tattoos.
Like Felly?
I haven't seen him shirtless. Oh, I don't have sleeves.
Okay.
So mine are ribs and legs.
Okay.
But
do they commemorate events and marathons?
It's barbed wire and butterflies. And no, it's not.
Roses and chips. Hey,
I got a butt one on the show last year, so.
Yeah.
You have a tattoo on your tuchus?
I have the Cleveland Browns elf, but as the Rich Eisen logo.
Is that how badly you needed a job? Because that
is amazing. Because yesterday, remember we briefly mentioned this? We wanted to bring it up kind of organically, but he volunteered the information.
I'm proud of it.
He walked right into our trap.
Yep. Do you know who Billy Koch is?
I don't.
Billy Koch is one of our players who got a tattoo on his tushy because he lost a bet. I assume you lost a bet.
I did. Fantasy football.
So I think you got to be smarter.
Yeah.
Just going to throw that out there. We just met.
Samson has literally known you like an hour.
I love
I've
this
been
guy.
Telling you all this stuff for a decade.
I'm going to take his word a little quicker.
Thank you.
Is your point of view that you don't see it so it doesn't matter?
No, I see it in the mirror and I try to ignore it. It's
but it
there.
It looks great.
How do you know?
Because we watched it.
There.
We watched it happen.
But you haven't seen how it's developed over time.
This is true.
What if it's more wrinkly now?
So this happened at last year's Super Bowl. Jay lost his bet last year, and it was the whole Brownie the Elf thing was kind of funny. And a listener sent us like a mock-up. Yeah,
oh, hey.
Exactly, right there.
There it is.
Of
that's what's on your...
Of Rich's logo kind of crossed with Brownie the Elf. And we did it at a place in Phoenix, and TJ and I there, and we live streamed it on our Instagram page, and people watched this happen live.
But to make it worse, this is the second year I lost. There's a dude's name under that, too.
Okay. So you obviously don't learn your lesson.
I don't.
So that is clear. So now it opens up, obviously, a world of possibility. What's on the line this year? The other cheek? What is it that you can offer up?
We stopped doing tattoos. I have to do 10 minutes open mic comedy night. I haven't done it yet. But
you lost again.
I lost three years
in a row. He's lost.
If you've never done open mic, I just did a live show in Philadelphia. I'm on a tour for Nothing Personal, and I'm going to be in Atlanta on Monday and Boston on Wednesday. It's a 90-minute show where it's a mic in front of an audience, and it's somewhat terrifying.
I bet. I'm horrified already.
So I think that you're going to need to prep. Now, you have obviously the ace in the hole. Just drop your drawers. And that's it. The audience will love it. Just show them your tattoos.
I could have gone a different way with that.
Jay's got a lot of dumb tattoos, I think.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't think I'm a tattoo guy because I wear a blazer and I was president of a team.
Yeah.
I never knew the correlation. I once had an attorney for one of the times.
You seem very clean cut, that's all.
Yeah.
So I don't associate tattoos with not being clean cut. I don't think that those are correlated. I had a great attorney who represented me in a case where I was being sued for RICO. Of course, I won.
The RICO.
Wow. RICO. Right, RICO Suave.
Wow.
And he was a totally buttoned up attorney, and I only looked at him one day because it was summer and we were preparing for me to be on the stand for what was going to be weeks. And he was wearing a long sleeve shirt and I was in shorts and a t-shirt. And I said, you know, you're dressed strangely. And he said, well, I can't show you what's under there. You can't know. And I said, well, now you obviously have told me, so show me. He was completely sleeved. And he was from a major law firm where you would not expect anyone to ever have a tattoo. And the concern of his bosses was that all of a sudden the clients would think he's not a good lawyer because he has tattoos. And this was said to me, and I said, that's ridiculous. There's no relationship between how smart you are, how good you are, and whether or not you have tattoos. And he helped us win the case in a landslide, fully sleeved up.
But people don't know Dolly Parton has sleeves. Dolly Parton is inked to the max.
I had no idea.
I didn't know that.
You ever notice when she's out, she's always, her dresses always cover her arms?
I always thought
arm.
That was support related.
It is not.
So she doesn't want anyone to know?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, how do you know then?
I've heard from reliable sources.
You have to do better than that.
Jolene told him.
I can't give you my sources, David. I'm a journalist.
We can debate that anytime over the next 3 hours, and I'm happy to. But you're going to drop a Dolly Parton has sleeves and leave it at that when...
I can tell you without question.
So you've seen them.
Dolly Parton has sleeves.
Have you seen them?
I have not seen them.
So you can't say it without question.
99.9%.
That 0.01 will get you every time. I love that fact. I'm actually very into tattoos. LeBron, when I saw LeBron without a shirt one time... the only thing I wouldn't do is put my name. Doesn't he have King James?
Oh, on the back.
On the back?
On his back, yeah. King Samson?
Is that is that because he wants to have a uniform on when he doesn't have a uniform on?
I don't know.
He was like 17 when he got that tattoo as well, so.
Yeah.
That's a year too young. You have to be 18. Parental consent.
I don't think that matters.
I mean,
anymore.
In Ohio, I don't think it matters.
Kids are 15, 16.
He's got a parent there.
I'm quite excited to see Bronny and how this plays out. And the reason I am is the thought of a father and son playing appeals to me greatly.
And I think we should say and come out front, we're rooting for this.
Big time. I
want nothing more than Bronny to be...
We've been rooting for this since Bronny was probably in like ninth grade.
I think since we realized, hey, Bronny could play in the NBA someday. Like, this would be amazing to see happen. But we want what's best for the kid. So let's hope.
But is he worse now than you thought he would be in ninth grade?
Is he worse?
See, that's where my head. I thought when he was young, he was a surefire NBA player.
I don't like the word worse.
Is he less able to be a productive NBA player in your mind today than he was when he was in ninth grade?
I think it's unclear. I think it's an eye on the report card. That's why I was saying, we talked about this a couple days ago when news broke that he was entering the transfer portal. I'd like to see him go to a smaller college and rack up some stats.
Yeah,
just
kind of
see him kind of flex his muscle and out there on the court, get 20 and 10 with seven dimes. I just want to see more good basketball. If that makes sense.
I just don't think LeBron has that kind of time.
So you think this is all on LeBron's clock?
I think this has to be. I don't see it any other way because there'd be no reason for him to declare, and he's claiming it's over greater flexibility.
The report is, I mean, let's just be a little bit official here. The report is that he's already entered the portal, but he's also entering the draft so he can go to workouts and get some kind of firsthand evaluation from scouts and from teams. And then based on that, he can decide, okay, maybe I won't be a first round pick. Maybe I won't go to team XYZ. Let me stay in the portal. Let me go somewhere else. And continue my college career.
So we had players who did that in baseball, and can I shed a little light on what you said? They're players who could go to college and play football, or they could get drafted out of high school. And what they do is they tell the team, hey, depends on where I get drafted, then I'll decide. It depends on what bonus you'll pay me, then I'll decide whether I'm going to go to college and play football or go to college and play baseball, or if I'm going to become a minor league player in your organization. And what that was code word for is, either pay me the amount of money I want or make it the team that I want to go to. And we never had an issue. People loved coming to the Marlins because it was very quick to the major leagues because we traded away everybody who made money. So players love to be drafted by the Marlins because all your goal is to make it to the big leagues,
right,
and start getting service time to get into arbitration where you make money to get into free agency. In the NBA, fewer rounds, slightly different. You're expected to help your team when you're a draft pick in the NBA, much like NFL. High drafts in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talk about the first round. We're going to talk about it with Tom Pelissero soon. You got to be productive today.
Yep.
In baseball, it's not that. But Bronny, if someone's going to draft him, I don't want to waste a draft pick if he's not going to help me. But I'm willing to sign him, put him on the roster, and see what happens and let LeBron play with him as a thank you. Listen, what they did with Kobe, remember the amount of money
they gave him? A huge amount of money at the end when it was clearly over.
It was an overpay, and there are people who do that. It's hard, as we said, to manage a aging superstar. And so I'm interested to see how this goes down because this, what Bronny did today, we are now step one of the news cycle.
Yep.
We're going to find out exactly what happens when it comes draft day and where LeBron sees himself next year. But I think he'll be back with the Lakers playing with Bronny.
Smart. Okay. Not a Friday news dump at 5 o'clock. This was perfectly timed so all the shows could talk about it and leave with it.
It was not a mistake.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we get to talk to Tom. We're going to talk about some of your burning questions because I'd like to get answers.
I have questions. Tom has answers. That's how this works.
Love it.
Gotta love it.
goes through your mind when you hear everybody wants one of you?
You know, it's flattering and humbling, Rich, but it's a result of the success we've had as a team. And, you know, it's just like, you know, but you know what, though? It is true, though. Like, we got great coaches on our staff. We got good players. It's a great reflection of our organization and what we've done. And I think, you know, that's the biggest thing. And to see guys that we've worked with over the last couple of years get opportunities with Matt and with Zach Taylor, you know, they're deserving of it because of what they've done on their own merit. And when they go in and compete for jobs, people say, man, we can see this guy leading our organization. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing those guys thrive.
Have you told Kingsbury that he has a job because of you, too?
No, sure, that's the that. Cliff got his deal on his own.
Okay, no, I'm sure he did. I know you had you were knocking on his door too to join your staff. I know that. So you
well, and I know he, you, when
you,
he was
you passed him according to
Schefter. I got him good, didn't I?
Yeah, you,
that was
I
pretty good.
You told that to Schefter that
I did.
You totally. What did you do to him?
Well, basically, you know, we he obviously has a pre-existing relationship with Patrick Mahomes. He was out here doing some things, and Cliff was having dinner with him and a group of people, and we have a mutual friend, and I tricked him into thinking that, you know, he was tampering and that he was going to lose some picks. It was
is what you changed somebody's name in your phone to Roger Goodell?
I did. Our mutual friend, he yeah,
so it showed up on his phone.
I couldn't let this
funny,
go on
man.
Too long. So our mutual friend, a guy named Chaz Gessner, I put his number in my phone as Roger Goodell and had him send me a text that said, you know, hey, this is tampering. You know better than this. You guys are both, you know, and I showed it to Kingsbury and I said, you know, Mr. Goodell, he never texted me. I said, you better call Steve Kime right now. And his face... He was like, he said, I thought I was going to throw up. He's like, that's wrong. I mean, I couldn't let it go on for more than 30 seconds.
Yeah, you could have had it.
It was a good but a bad joke, man. Okay. I mean, he's like, you ruined dinner, man.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I am clearly not Rich Eisen, but I'm David Sampson, back for day two.
All right.
And I am sitting at the Rich Eisen show desk, which I am making my own. It's furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call them. Click Grainger.com. Even stop by. I think I'm going to go on my way back to LAX after this. Because this desk, I don't like my desk where I do nothing personal. I like this one way better.
Time for a new one. Time for an upgrade.
It's time for Grainger. We are lucky. I had a choice of guests here. And fantastic people who work for the Rich Eisen Show. Bookers to people in sound, behind the scenes, in front of the scenes. Such a professional crew. And when we had a chance to have Tom Pelissero come here, I said, we have to talk draft. I want to hear everything about him. Follow him on Twitter. And I've not had a chance to interview him. And all of a sudden, you appear. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm feeling outdressed by you here, David. You're really classing it up. I'm in the hoodie in the basement, like I am so many Fridays. What's up to my boys in the studio there, too?
Hey, Tommy P, you look great always. Don't apologize for anything. You have perfect hair.
I like the background, but I like when your head is in between the two helmets, which I assume like the field goal which you go for. I think you look terrific. But
I hadn't thought. The between the two helmets, but you're right. That's a good spot. And now I'm going to be conscientious about making sure my head is right.
You'll never do a Zoom again the same.
Wait, Tom, what helmets are those?
We got that's an NFL Network helmet and a Reese's Senior Bowl up there.
Fantastic.
They're always out the top. You only get this on the Rich Eisen Show. When I'm on NFL Network, it just kind of cuts off right there. We got different angles. We got a lot of stuff going on.
Well, you are the NFL Network insider. There's going to be plenty of coverage on the draft. So many interesting questions, the least of which is who's going to go one. I think we all agree it's going to be Caleb Williams. The question is, and part of this show, which was fascinating to me, burning questions that Chris has. And it bothers me when people ask questions and don't have answers. So we said, let's get Tom and actually answer some of these burning questions. Yeah. So the Bears for me at 9, when you've got the 1 and the 9 – and I was thinking about when I did drafts. What about trading one of those picks and loading up, getting something to help you? Maybe even trading the number one pick. Or if you get Caleb Williams, what do you do at number 9? So please help us answer the question.
Well, they did it last year with the number one pick, obviously, and that set them up for the haul that they've got this time around, making that deal with Carolina. Now, at the time, they couldn't have known that the Panthers would start 1-10 and fire their head coach, and Bryce Young would have a really rocky type of rookie season, which now they're rebooting again with Dave Canales coming on as the head coach. But it worked out in their favor. You know, this time around, the difference seems to be there is a level of conviction, not just in Chicago, but around the league, about Caleb Williams as that guy. He visited the Bears recently. He spent time with them in his pro day. He spent time with them at the combine. To your point, all the arrows are pointing toward this is the plan for the Bears, barring something going totally haywire. And there are a lot of things that happen in the league. You never say never on anything, but certainly by all appearances, it's Caleb at one. So what do you do at number nine? Well, that's going to depend in part on what's going on around you, because, you know, depending who you talk to, and I've been doing this, you know, on the phone throughout the course of this morning, talking to people, everyone's trying to project it out. Do we get three quarterbacks in those first, you know, eight picks? Do we get four? Is there some chance there's a fifth just because there's a run and people get desperate? There's a lot of different things that can happen up there. It's a really offense heavy top of the draft. When you talk about, you know, two or three receivers that are going to go high, you've really got one tight end. We'll see where Brock Bowers goes, but he's going to go pretty high in this draft. You got multiple offensive tackles, and then you got the quarterbacks. You know, if you're getting a quarterback at number one, you're in a pretty good spot where you're sitting there. If you're Ryan Poles going, hey, all these other quarterbacks, let's go get them all off the board, push down the rest of those players where we're going to be in a good position. I know there's plenty of people in Chicago, Bears fans, who would like them to draft a wide receiver there. They've obviously invested in the defense over the past couple of years, both in free agency, through trades with Montez Sweat. You can always use more playmakers, especially when you're building around a young quarterback here. And you also can continue to fortify the protection unit. You know, the Bears are in a really good spot. What they're confident in, you know, every year, David, there's 32 picks in the first round. And most teams on their board have somewhere 18 to 20 to 22 legit first round type guys. So at number nine, you're well within that bandwidth where, depending how this thing falls, there certainly is a scenario where you could even, you know, you could trade up. Obviously you want to go get someone, but maybe you even trade back and figure enough of those premium players are getting pushed down because you're getting your quarterback at one, and a bunch of those other guys may go in those next, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 picks.
I love the idea of trading back because I love accumulating assets, and I'm not sure that there's a difference, and it's never been proven to me, and we've looked analytically what the odds are of being successful. You saw what happened. You mentioned Bryce Young. Let's not forget the intrigue of who would go one, who would not. How did the season go? I'm not willing to tell you today that Caleb Williams, I don't know if anyone here is, that he's guaranteed to be better than Fields. Is it a guarantee that next year's performance of Williams would be better? But the Bears, and you said it through meetings, I also done these meetings with players who are high school or college players. I don't exactly know what I am gleaning from them during these meetings that, oh, they understand my playbook. That's what football people like to say, and it makes me smile. I just don't, there's so few guarantees that to me it's a numbers game, and that's why I love acquiring multiple picks, multiple assets, because you have a better chance of hitting one of them and winning with a young quarterback that outperforms in his rookie deal. That's really the only way to win.
The thing I've always found fascinating, David, about baseball is you're drafting 17, 18-year-old kids. I remember when I was still dabbling a little bit covering baseball and the Twins took Byron Buxton with a first-round pick. The dude shows up. The next day they bring out, you know, all their draft picks to come take BP with the big league team. And he was like this tiny little guy. He looked like every 17-year-old I've ever seen, where you could see, you know, he's got long limbs and he's got a sweet stroke. And he's going to grow into that body, but like, guy doesn't look like an adult. I've just always thought
it's
that that's
projection,
a
baby.
Right, it's complete projection, and so is the NFL draft. But you at least have tape of them doing, you know, things that are a little bit, you know, closer. I mean, I pitched varsity baseball. If somebody saw Byron Buxton hit a home run off me, or when we played Joe Mauer when he was here, you know, Joe Mauer getting a hit off me, not that impressive. At least if you're drafting somebody from Alabama or USC, you've seen them play against guys who are at least, you know, pro caliber. But you're right. I mean, I think that that's kind of the mentality for a lot of teams. You just don't want to trade down so far that you're missing out on those premier types of talents here. And I think that, you know, some of the other teams that are up there at the top are in the same boat right now where, okay, if Caleb indeed goes number one, and to go back to your original question, I don't think there's any guarantees in the NFL. I think the Bears had 3 years of tape on Justin Fields to make the determination about what they thought he was. the rest of the league had 3 years of tape to make a determination on what they thought he was. And the determination of the league, by virtue of what the trade compensation ended up being, said this guy's a developmental, you know, backup with upside to potentially become a starter again. If he were more than that, if this were a real debate, and I saw all the posts about, like, this is the most polarizing debate in Chicago, like, maybe for the fans, but if you've got the opportunity to reset from a salary cap perspective, lock up a guy on a cost-controlled rookie deal as opposed to having Justin Fields going into year four and you having to make the determination on picking up a fifth-year option, on signing him to a contract extension, there's really not much debate, even though we still got to see, you know, how quickly does Caleb Williams come along in the NFL.
If you're
New England, you're making the same determinations about the other quarterbacks too and trying to figure out, does this make sense? Because if you put your name on a quarterback, it's really hard to walk that back later. That's your guy and you're going to sink or swim with him.
Well, that's one of the things when all the mock drafts are happening and when you make a decision what you're going to do as an executive, you have to make sure that your scouts are not holding on to a thought of wanting to be right versus what they actually see. And you have to create an environment where it's okay to be wrong in the draft and you're not risking your job over it. Because it causes the development people to not be as forthcoming as you want them to be about what the prospects are for your player. So one of the things that we tried to do was have continuity in the front office in that regard, because I wanted the truth about these players, because when you're doing projection, it's really hard until reality comes. And so with Justin Fields, you find out really fast what the reality is because the market tells you. We'll go out with a player. We want to test his market. We'll do it all the time. The Bears knew exactly what they were getting. You call the other 31 teams, but you know exactly what you're getting. So it's not a shocking thing to the Bears where they said, oh my God, we thought this was a 2 first-round player, and now look. And so the complicated part is the timing. And that's why when you're looking at drafts and mock drafts and thinking about your team, you have to be thinking about your salary cap. You have to be thinking about, can you win now in your conference, in your division? Or are you acknowledging that this is not a today issue? But then you can't tell your fans that. So the juggling act that happens, Tom, is what fascinates me. And when you're dealing with all of the mock drafts and thinking about this, are you juggling all those things that the front offices are?
Well, I think that, you know, I use just the mock drafts as a baseline to kind of investigate and try to figure out what the options are for different teams. But every year there's a surprise in the top 10, if not the top 5, something, you know, that people were not anticipating was going to happen. Every GM, yeah, is trying to figure out what the other GMs are doing, which is why I thought it was interesting. Everybody's been talking about Washington with Drake May or Jaden Daniels. And when I was at the league meeting a couple of weeks ago, and I was having these conversations with other GMs and people who know the Washington Brain Trust. Granted, Adam Peters is a first-time GM. You got a first-time owner in Josh Harris. They're going to have a different process. They got Bob Myers, the former Warriors GM, who was a big part. He's in every meeting and giving them advice on these things. It can go a lot of different directions, but people who know Adam Peters within the NFL, not that they have information, but just knowing him, knowing where he comes from, how he was trained, think J.J. McCarthy could be in that mix too. So whatever that happens at number 2, then that's going to dictate what the options are for the Patriots at number 3 in terms of, could they trade out? If they are willing to, there absolutely are teams that would be willing to trade into that number 3 overall pick. And then if it's quarterback with the top 3 picks, does Arizona have the opportunity to trade with somebody who goes up and takes the 4th one? I mean, this is where things could really get wild. It's always great for ratings, David, when we got a bunch of quarterbacks, you know, because people like the drama. But also, when you have this many quarterbacks, you generally have more trades that happen up at the top. Sometimes they happen in advance. There's also a school of thought that your best offer, if you're, the Patriots at number 3, might not come until you're on the clock. Why? Because one team might be willing to trade in blindly to number 3 right now, but after you know who 1 and 2 are, there might be multiple teams that are trying to come into the number 3 overall pick, which is exactly what happened for Monty Austin-Fort and the Cardinals last year. The Texans had multiple different plans in place. They had a very good idea Bryce Young was going to go number 1. What they had to figure out was, how high up did they need to go to ensure they got both C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson? Turned out they needed to trade all the way up to number 3. Monty Austin-Fort stockpiled future draft picks because he's been starting a real ground up rebuild in Arizona. Now Monty's sitting there at number four and once again could have the top pick that's not a team that's going to take a quarterback. He could end up trading back again or this time stand in and just say, whether it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or somebody else, we've got conviction. This is our guy. I would tell you this, fairly clear Monty at least is open to listening to offers for that pick.
I wonder what Buffalo, we were talking yesterday about the Diggs trade, thinking about what Buffalo would be doing at 28 and hoping that they had some sort of plan other than the triple speak that we heard from the GM yesterday during his press conference. What do you think, if I am a player agent, I'm a little surprised and certainly that the team was willing to do it on their side too. The restructure of Diggs's contract. And it wasn't a restructure. It was an early grant of unrestricted free agency. That's how I read this to be. And that is a gift in some cases and a curse in others to do to a player. What did you view that for Stephon?
I've known Stephon since he came into the NFL. His first team was the Vikings. I live up here in Minneapolis, so I've talked to him a number of times. With Stephon, he works harder than anybody on the practice field. He's a tone setter, all those things. But Stephon also likes the drama. He likes a little bit of drama sometimes, and that's why every offseason you get cryptic tweets and, other things. If you're trading him from Buffalo to Houston, and these are conversations that went all the way back to the combine, and everybody knew Diggs was available, you might want to make the guy feel good and limit that drama right out of the gate. So what do? You give him a little bit of extra cash in 2024. You then say, all right, we're going to lop off those additional years of your deal. That does two things. One, yes, it may make the guy a little bit happier about going to a different team with a bunch of people that he doesn't know. But two, it also accelerates your possibility of a compensatory pick if and when Diggs leaves in March of 2025. In other words, if he left those future years on the deal, then after the season, Diggs is either wanting a new contract or, if things don't go well, you're probably releasing him because he's beyond the guaranteed money. Well, when you release a guy, you don't get a compensatory pick. The Texans have now set themselves up in a situation where your best case scenario is Stephon Diggs goes out there, plays like the Diggs that we've seen for years, becomes a cornerstone of your franchise, and you happily give him close to top dollar, which is, somewhere in that $25 million a year range probably for a receiver at this stage in his career. If it doesn't go well, he walks in free agency. The Texans have gone buck wild with trades and free agency this year. Maybe next year they're anticipating, okay, we're probably going to have more free agent losses. That's going to work in our favor in the compensatory pick formula. So you end up giving a two right now to get Diggs. And if depending on how things work out, again, if he leaves, you could very well be getting back a three in 2026, and you're not giving up ultimately that much.
Do you think that Diggs and what his future is in Houston is dependent solely on team success, or is it a fit where there's some thought, and you know him way better than most, the fit in Buffalo, was there ever a question about it? Is that something that you're looking for when you're evaluating what he would want during or after next season? Fit or team success?
Well, he wants the ball. Start there with Stephon Diggs. I think that fit is everything, but fit to him is just, I want to make plays for the team. And again, he works so hard in practice. Even last year when there was drama, I was out there with you guys in El Segundo when, on day one, there was the question, Diggs wasn't on the practice field. Then McDermott said something, but kind of put his foot in his mouth in terms of I sent him home versus he went home. It just, the whole thing was messed. But the next day, Diggs got out there, and everybody involved told me he was going hard. He looked just like Diggs on the field. So it's a matter of just him being in a position where, he's a competitor. He wants to go out there and get the football. If that doesn't happen this year or he's unhappy, now he's got the choice, and he can go ahead and, test the free agent market. Everything else, I think, kind of flows from there. But make no mistake, Texans are making these moves they've made this offseason because they believe they've got a window to go and win right now. Nick Caserio, the GM, comes from New England, where they're always conscientious of the comp pick formula. You go through stretches of spending, and then you go through stretches of, scaling it back. This is clearly a spend phase when you trade for Mixon, when you trade for Diggs, when you sign for Danielle Hunter. You're saying, we can do this right now over the next 1 to 2 years. Part of the reason you might think that is because we got C.J. Stroud on a rookie contract, so a cost-controlled quarterback, as opposed to 2 years from now, we're going to be sitting here, depending what happens with these other quarterbacks, and saying, Is the number $60 million a year on C.J. Stroud? Is it even higher than that? The salary cap appears to be exploding. When you've got a rookie quarterback on that deal, those first 3 or 4 years where he's cost controlled is your best opportunity, just from an economical perspective, to put a lot of other pieces in place around him and try to make your run. There's not a long history at this point, at least in what I would call the modern age over the last 10 years, where quarterback contracts are eating up even larger amounts of the salary cap. There's not a lot of history of those high paid quarterbacks winning championships. Patrick Mahomes has done it, but he did a deal that was very flexible from the team's perspective in terms of the cash flow, in terms of the length, the way that they could flip it over again and again to create additional cap space there. It allowed them to pack all these other guys in around them. There's other teams that have struggled once they've paid the quarterback. So Nick Caserio wisely, in my opinion, is going and saying, we can win this thing right now. We got to the playoffs last year with a super young team and a rookie quarterback. What can we do in year two? Well, rather than sitting back and just going, we're going to slowly draft and develop. I think this is the biggest thing, David, in the modern NFL. There's very few programs that are the old school Packers like Ron Wolf strategy of, and Ron Wolf, of course, signed Reggie White. I mean, he was not a stranger to work in the free agent market, but like that gradual, very patient build solely through young players. When you've got a window in the NFL, you attack it and you go for it. That's what we're seeing right now in Houston, and the rest of the AFC South has to be looking at what they're doing and saying, we're in for a real interesting fall.
It's really an amazing thing you're saying, because what I'm hearing is that to win, you do it when your quarterback's young and not getting paid, you bring in people around him. But if you don't win during that time, then you're the Dolphins, where you're jettisoning players when you may have to pay Tua, and then your chances of winning are decreased. So a quarterback gets to choose. If I'm good enough, I can do a Mahomes, maybe I can do a Brady, and I can try to accomplish everything. Or you just got to get paid because you don't know how many years you're going to have that sort of income, but yet your chances of winning decrease because the talent around you is different. And what we don't talk about enough is the salary cap, and football has it, baseball doesn't. What it is causing with analytics is this thought that the best way to win now is to have young quarterbacks, don't pay them, because if you do, and when you do, you're not actually going to win as a team. That is an unintended consequence, in my opinion, and not a positive for the NFL.
Well, think about this, David. In 2013, so that's 11 years ago, the highest paid quarterback in the NFL was Aaron Rodgers at $22 million per year.
Wow.
And granted, the salary cap was about half of what it is right now, but the quarterback contracts in that time have well more than doubled. And every top quarterback, and by top, I mean the top 10, but also just whoever happens to be the next guy who gets close enough to free agency that he's got the leverage, is going to be in that $50 million plus per year range. This is where, and I know I've discussed this many times on the show, and there's all these people, it's this catchy little social media thing to say the salary cap doesn't exist. It does. If it didn't exist, then the 49ers wouldn't be just releasing Eric Armstead. You wouldn't have teams need to do what the Chargers were doing and cut Mike Williams and basically flush Keenan Allen in a salary dump because he wouldn't take a new deal that would have lowered his number this year. Then you have to pay cut Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, who had like 17 sacks last season. Look at the Vikings with Kirk Cousins. Now, there's a lot of layers to what happened with Kirk Cousins here, but part of it is they were only going to go up to a certain point because they're thinking, we've got to pay Justin Jefferson eventually. We've got to pay some of our other young up-and-coming types of players. We need to be able to keep it healthy. The Chiefs did it a couple of years ago, where everyone said, why in the world are they trading Tyreek Hill? It's because Tyreek Hill looked at the Devontae Adams deal, which on paper was reported as $28 million per year, but that included two lump sum numbers over the next couple of years that he'll never see. It was $25 million per year. All of a sudden, Tyreek wants 30. The Chiefs, who of course are there every year, competing every year, and they got a guy in Patrick Mahomes who's done a deal that's allowed them a great deal of flexibility to put pieces in place around him, went, you know what? We're getting offered significant draft picks, and we're saving ourselves $25 to $30 million per year in cash and cap space.
I got the cure for all this if you want.
What do they do?
Tom, I got the cure. No cap at all, like baseball, and all contracts guaranteed. No more hiding.
You want to get rid of, we don't want to have one team be the Yankees in the NFL forever. That'd be a good way.
I appreciate your time. You are the NFL Network insider, and we're going to need more of your insight going forward. Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you.
You got it.
All right, Tommy.
Love you, Tom. See you soon.
All right, brother.
You love him?
Yeah, it's our man, bro.
Okay.
Tommy P's our guy.
I rarely end an interview with that, but love you, man. We're going to go to break.
I love you, but now I'm not going to say it.
See,
you messed don't up love now, you
David. I'll say it.
Tell everybody, Jack, who your godfather is. Who's your godfather?
Ron Shelton, who is the writer of Bull Durham,
baby.
The movie that made me exist. So, I'm here because of that film.
So why not have him as the godfather of your child?
Absolutely.
Him, right?
Yeah. Cosmic All-Star.
What is it like to have Ron Shelton as a godfather?
I mean, as I got older and realized all the movies he had written and directed, it really, I mean, as I did what he does,
right. It
really became more of a resource. We get lunch a lot now, and I really like the guy. He's amazing. He's
okay. How are you introduced him to Bull Durham? How was that introduced to you?
I went to audition for Ron. I did really well, and then the agent says, you did really well, but you got to go through. And so I went out and met Kevin and pitched through the ball around with him.
So the catch that you had to conduct in order to get the gig was with Kevin Costner?
Yes.
Where? Do you remember?
Out at Warner Brothers Studios out in the valley. And
outside the bungalow.
Outside a bungalow there. Yeah.
So people are driving their golf carts around you while you're trying to have a catch with Kevin Costner?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, no, don't break any windows.
That's right. Because you are Nuke LaLoosh. You're supposed to throw it in any direction right there.
You know, he was written as a lefty.
Right.
And Ron decided that, you know, he wanted me, so he turned into a right hand.
That kind of ruined the movie, though. If only he was a lefty, would have really taken us to the next level.
Be careful what you wish for, because you might not exist.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, you boil it all down.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I'm glad you got the part. I'm glad you memorized your lines that day.
Yeah.
Thanks, ouch.
Yeah.
Wow. That was that was a Nuke LaLoosh fastball high and tight right there.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show. It is David Sampson filling in day number two with the crew.
Yeah.
So happy they had me back. If you want to speak to us, you know, there's a call-in number. Just call us. I want to hear from you. It's 844-204-RICH. I would like next time I'm here to change that number because it should be 204, you know,
Dave.
Dave. You just go Dave, but I'm not a Dave.
You never gone by Dave?
Only people who do it to mock me.
Oh, interesting.
Ooh. I've always been a David or a Sammy or a Sparky.
Sammy.
Sparky, yes. It is.
Sparky's a good one.
Love you, Sparky.
I want to go to a caller. We have someone right now.
Let's do it.
I'm supposed to be able to see the name.
Can you see it?
No. Lonnie.
It's Lonnie. What's up, Lonnie?
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing?
Good morning.
Good to hear from you.
Hey, man, it's been a minute. I want to talk about the men's Final Four. Even though I'm a DePaul University alumnus, I want to congratulate Purdue for being back in the Final Four.
It's big of you, honey.
Thank you.
They haven't been in the Final Four since my brother played on that team 44 years ago with their magnificent head coach, Lee Rose. People think it was Gene Cady, but it was Lee Rose, who doesn't get his flowers. I think he passed a couple of years ago. My brother sits on the board of his foundation. Lee Rose was a great coach, and he was a father figure to my brother. So I would like him to be mentioned during this time.
By me? Who do you want mentioning him, the broadcast or me?
When all these broadcasts talk about the Final Four, I want them to mention Coach Lee Rose, who was Purdue University's head coach the last time they've been to the Final Four.
I'll make you a deal. I can guarantee you that I will mention Coach Lee Rose. That's about as much as I can promise, though. I'm not sure that I'm willing.
He was a great guy, and I'm hoping one day that DePaul University gets back to the Final Four, but I don't know when that's going to happen, but I keep hoping.
Lonnie, you think they're going to win? They're going to beat Connecticut on next Monday?
Well, I would like to see them. The fact that they got to the Final Four, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But if they win the whole thing, I know my brother will be extremely pleased. But I would like, I don't know if they can beat Connecticut, but I would like to see them get to the final game if possible.
Well, we're going to find out.
Thanks for the call, Lonnie.
I appreciate your call. And I'm just going to keep saying Coach Lee Rose throughout the show now. So we're going to try to give him his flowers as much as possible.
We can only control what we can control.
How can we can control anything other than what we say?
But I mean, put that name out there. Maybe they'll pick up on it.
And just start talking about him?
Why not? Give him his flowers.
I don't even get that expression. It associate that with death, flowers, well, weddings.
Yeah, you want to give someone their flowers before they die.
I don't know that expression.
They lost to UCLA that year in the Final Four. I was looking it up right now.
What? How does that?
In 1980.
Can you mention the coach's name?
Lee Rose.
So the fact is that we have now helped Lonnie.
I'm just giving facts over here, David. Come on now.
Lee Rose.
Just giving facts.
That's what we do here, David.
I think it's outstanding. I like when callers do that. You never know what they're going to talk about. I would have bet almost anything that you have that would not have been the subject when I was told that it was a Final Four conversation. I didn't have it going the DePaul-Lee Rose way.
I think Lonnie's point was that when we talk about Purdue, we mostly just associate Gene Cady as being the head coach. And so he was just throwing some love to Lee Rose.
I was also looking at the roster, and I was trying to guess
who was Lonnie's brother.
I was waiting for him to mention that.
I know, he never gave his brother a shout-out, yeah. And I was just trying to guess, looking at the names.
Couldn't you just ask him his last name?
I could have, but I think it's more fun to just guess.
But now you have no answer.
To speculate. Well, I know that Lonnie's a loyal listener. He'll call back, and I'll ask him then.
You think that you have the capacity to remember when he calls back, by the way, what's your last name? I'm looking at the roster for your brother from DePaul.
Yes.
Oh, he keeps notes.
I'm still waiting for a dude in Portland, Oregon to pay up on his Daniel Jones bet.
Yeah, tell him about that one.
And you want to know why he hasn't called back? He doesn't want to pay you back.
He owes me a steak, an expensive one.
Yes, this is a
better fact. Than a tattoo on your tuchus. Oh. A little steak.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, by the way, I don't associate Purdue with Gene Cady.
Tuchus, that's the second time in 2 weeks we've had Tuchus. Paul Heyman last week.
Oh, yeah, Paul Heyman
said Tuchus, and now you've said Tuchus.
I work Yiddish in as much as I can.
As you should.
Without having to say Schmeckle.
Well, you just did.
No, I didn't.
You did say it. You literally just said it.
No, I thought you said you was okay, Spider.
I thought you said you was okay, Spider.
It's a good dismount. Outstanding.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast-scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark. Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.